welcome to a half hour of Mind Webs. Short stories from the worlds of speculative fiction. This is Michael Hansen with a Mind Web story, this time that comes from the book Quark 3, which was edited by Samuel Delaney and Marilyn Hacker. This is titled Nature Boy, and it's written by Josephine Saxton. He could hear what his mother was doing from where he lay on the lawn. She was sitting at her desk doing calisthenics, arms out, arms up. No, she wasn't. Do not be foolish, Arthur. She had just been into the kitchen to get herself a huge spoonful of honey to take away the taste of Nux Vomica bitters, which she took at the advice of spirit guides to stimulate her pituitary. No. Oh, Arthur, stop it. She was actually writing letters as secretary to the League for the Further Reformation of Women's Rights and the Society for the Protection of the Female Orgasm and the Rise of Sappho, a secret society that was trying to get lesbianism outlawed so that its case could be publicly fought. Arthur noticed that he was chewing the ends of his forelock, which was too long, and this reminded him to stop his thoughts. It was not, of course, entirely possible to stop all thought, but it was certainly possible to put the brakes on and stop filthy fantasies. Just get it right. His mother was a nice, normal old lady, and she was doing her minutes for the Women's Institute. Right. Oh, and that reminded him, the Society for the Complete Annihilation of Menstruation. It wasn't fair that he should be tortured on such a beautiful day as this by horrid thoughts. To daydream was fine, but to think up things like that about his mother was positively unhealthy. It came in phases, the tendency to think wicked things about her. It would seem that some part of him was getting revenge because she had not allowed him to go alone on holiday. Just the once, alone. But he had never been anywhere alone. He would forget where he was, and it would be dreadful for him to be lost at the seaside. Yes, quite dreadful. And mother had her own problems. Depressions. Well, you might know it isn't my fault. Crippled by hormones. But she hadn't really said that at all. Nor had the spirit guides, because she never had anything to do with mediums and that trash. Be content. One can worship nature just as well here as anywhere. With a tall oak all to oneself. And all this land. Private. Lucky. Feeling easier, he relaxed, deep into the flatness of turf, imagining that it absorbed him partially like a feather bed. His favorite kind of day. Hot, quiet, sweet, light, blue. Not even one virgin cloud marred the flat blue. It shimmered. Scorching sun. Nature, let me be one with you. Kept on saying that for about 30 years, especially in the summers. And it will happen, finally. In the end, I shall be transmogrified, a rose bush or a lady beech. Either would do. Looking straight up, not sinking but floating, neither here nor there. Waiting for something to appear in the sky. How wonderful, how impossible. Old dream of a silver ship or a flower. Or a goddess in the sky. Listening. People think these days are quiet, but listen. A field mouse rustles the blades of grass at the edge of the lawn. Turn head and stare straight into those little eyes. Whiskers twitching, and he senses that I will do him no harm. Explosions, too. Aqualiga seed cases, launching missiles, 24 inches, shiny black bullets containing everything necessary for the production of another cosmos, called Aqualiga. Arthur began to feel calmer. The heat could excite the brain cells at times. Soon, he thought, soon I will go for a walk in the nice, cool wood, feed my being on shadows and bluebells and beeches and oaks. Oak. Nature was a great healer of the emotions, and yet he had come to her through intellect, measuring, counting. He would perhaps have gone to university, become a biologist or something, if it hadn't been for his nerves. Smiling at his privileges like this glorious day, when others were working, he was glad of his nerves. A euphemism, though, preserved for the sons of rich mothers. A cattle tech would wait 18 years, maybe more, before it smelled blood and leapt to drink. What did it feel like to be a cattle tech, waiting less than a tree branch? Miracle of mysteriousness. Cattle techs surely were not trapped in mere behavior, but had a sense of destiny. A gentle susurrus of nose blowing frightened the field mouse away, turned his attention from the gunfire and the herbaceous border. Hay fever? Hormone trouble? Who sneezes and hawks on a day like this? Only his mother, surely. Damn, it was not good. Never a good sign that he should overhear himself denigrating her like this. It had been like this last summer, before the incident. As if to bring down black clouds on his thoughts, he leapt up quickly and went over to the French windows.
Hello, Arthur, dear. What are you doing?
Nothing much. Thought I would take a walk in the wood and gather some bluebells for you.
What a lovely idea. I'd come with you, but I have minutes to write out. Tell Janet tea at 5, please, and Mrs. Clark won't be coming over. She rang to say she has a headache.
Another victim of hormones bites the pillow. Pow, women's ailments. Working for him on a subatomic level, keeping them with their heads down, weeping into lace. Steady, Arthur. The heat. And since when would Sol harm me, who loves you so? I am the only true pantheist for hundreds of miles around.
A what, dear?
Nothing. I mean, yes, see you later. You should come out today, Mother. It's too good a day to stay indoors.
But I have to write to the Prime Minister about premenstrual tension. It's very...
He went into the kitchen wondering what it was that his mother had really said, and got as near to Janet as he could to inhale the odor of hot flour and raisins.
Master Arthur, you should ask.
Yes, Janet. Mother says tea at 5, please. And Mrs. Juno has a headache and won't be coming to the feast.
What?
She rang earlier, just Mother and myself, for tea, Janet. A wasp settled on a lemon pie. He bent closer and saw it suck at a minute bead of syrup that had oozed up out of the meringue topping. Oh, the irreparable sadness to come when Janet dies. She was terribly old. What other housekeeper would be able to see inside his 40-year-old shell to the real person within? Would tolerate him stealing scones to the point of saying, "Master Arthur," in shocked tones. He slunk out through the kitchen garden, taking pea pods as he went and a few strawberries. Father would have been very angry about that. But he was dead long since, swept up into the bosom of nature. Since he had gone, the measuring of nature's dimensions had gradually ceased. Dad had been very good at putting out nets to catch moths. Butterflies, too, were pinned down and labeled. Rainfall measured, humidity marked 3-hourly. Studying bees, ants, leaves, how sap rises, the nitrogen cycle, dozens of notebooks, observations, readings from biology texts. Father had known all the peripheral facts about nature, all except for the, but what did one call it? The mystical heart? Something like that. Arthur was not good at finding phrases for things he had rather experience than account for. Father had lacked awe. The path to the wood led through a haunted thicket that grew around a pond. A Rusalki lived here, although Arthur had never seen her. The whole estate was full of sprites and spirits and elves, but the Rusalki was Arthur's favorite. She was a wicked and vengeful creature with blank eyes and long mossy hair, and she waited by the pond, ready to pull in the unwary. The spirit of a drowned maiden, Agnes Bonswith, aged 9 years to be exact. Here was her home, not the village churchyard. His best slipped into the green weed one summer day long ago. "Hello, Agnes," he murmured, and made inner obeisance, and fingered his leaf of wormwood always in his trouser pocket. Dad had been very good on mythology. He would have been appalled at what he would have called a descent into superstition, but the sun was filtered in the woods, And as Arthur approached the grove, his spirits rose in him. Gladness, peace, life on all levels. Miraculous. He greeted his favorite birch tree, stroking its silvery body, and pointed at an ilex.
Don't prick and scratch me, or I shall make you into Christmas crowns.
Sacrifice. He bent over, all games gone, supported himself with hands on knees, and fought back tears of rage. No. No, all that, it was sick and wicked. He could still see the blood slow and thick soaking into the mold at the roots of the tall oak, so mean, so little of it, and yet such a horribly meaningful act. And it worked. He had felt relieved and happy and sweetened somehow. It had worked, and he needed help now. Stop thinking about it, please, Arthur. A tiny shrew. A poor simulacrum for a human being. He began to gather bluebells. When he had a nice fat bunch, he sat against his favorite tree, with the idea stone in sight, in the center of the grove, leading to the oak. It was a shady grove with a smooth floor bordered by wild red campions like blood spots, the great tower at its farther end, and dramatically lit by sun, probably even pre-druidic. And when he died, there would be crowds paying money to come and see, to pay the death duties. It was a horrid thought to nature. He often wished he had been born in the time when his place had belonged to wonderful beings, probably Atlanteans. Hazy pictures of marvelous people conducting rites in the grove often haunted Arthur. His favorite dreams took place at the dawn of time. He was sure there was some special reason why this historic place belonged to his family. Maybe. At his feet, he noticed a toad. Then came a colony of red ants, and he watched them, smug in the knowledge that most people would think these creatures chaotic. And he knew otherwise. They were well-ordered, civilized. He tried to concentrate on the movements of the small ants, but could not eradicate the image of a hungry tree sucking eagerly at the blood that soaked in around its roots. In a moment, he would get up and go back for tea. He must not stay here too long. A small sandaled foot suddenly crushed the ants. Utterly horrified, half-risen on tense thighs, he looked up into the small, pale face of a little girl, raveled hair and withered bluebells framing a very direct gaze.
Why did you do that, you horrid child?
He was dry in the mouth with emotion.
I hate ants.
She hated ants. So simple. He had to try twice before his voice would sound.
What? What are you doing here anyway? This is private property.
I know. I like playing here. What are you going to do?
Insolent. Lower class, cheeky. On an otherwise perfect day, he was pestered with village brats. He had noticed, too, his abject terror. She, his eyes, the pointed chin, horribly bold. What you gonna do? Push you in the pond, he had said. No. No. Nothing like that. It was just fantasy and nameless guilt. They had told him not to think about it, never to speak of it. But time did not move on days like this. Suddenly he was glad the child had trespassed here, for now nothing bad could happen. Some things could only occur when he was alone. One must not frighten children. Few people would ever understand in any case.
You shouldn't kill things just because you hate them. Ants are very clever creatures.
She leered, showing a space in her front teeth.
Go on home. This is my wood.
He shouldn't have said that.
I want to play here.
Well, I damn well want to play here too, so go away. He needed her to stay. What was he saying?
Let's play together.
What cheek. What an odd girl. Fancy asking him to play, a middle-aged man. Perhaps she was not quite normal mentally. Many of the village children were retarded, so his mother said.
Let's be friends.
Oh, dear, what could one say when a person said that? Well, All right, then. What were you playing at?
I am the queen of the trees. What were you playing at?
Idea stones. Oh, heavens, he had told her. He had never told anyone before.
How do you play it?
He now had to tell her. Well, why not? You put your head down on that stone over there, and then you get an idea. Then you have to do the idea.
Magic?
Yes. She accepted it. Children were innocent. He felt fearful, shivery. He must send her home and go home himself. He must. But the girl was very enthusiastic. Her mean little face was radiant, and she had thrown down her bluebells and stood by the stone, waiting. It wouldn't work for you, actually.
Yes, it will. I'm queen of the trees, ain't I? See that big tree up there? That's my palace.
He could not answer, but did crawl on hands and knees over to the stone, recalled the last idea the thing had given him. Sacrifice. Please, please, no, nothing like that. Just pretend. Just to amuse the child. But think how it would be. A shrew had wrought wonders with his unhappiness. What then? He laid his head on the stone, more from weariness than anything else, tired after all by the heat and the strain of meeting a stranger and the doubts of everything. You had to be very sure of a thing, and not see the other side of a question. Then you were happy. That was the trouble. He fumbled in his pocket for a leaf of wormwood, the talisman against Rusalkis and such like. If this child were really only Agnes's shade, things would be simple. But she was flesh and blood, and she came and laid her head on the idea stone, too. He had been younger even than her when he had first discovered the properties of the stone. It had given him some wonderful games to play and some awful things, too, which were, of course, the real things, the great ideas. What you gonna do? Push in the pond. The stone told me. What you gonna do? Sacrifice you to the Tao. The stone told me. How? How, though? His penknife? Even lying down like this, he began a sickening faint. Oh, please let something intervene. Hang on to the fact that this was only a game. And she was queen of the trees. One could not possibly harm such a one. She would be sacred herself. Yes, that was right. But who was really queen of the trees? Who owned all these acres? His mother. She was the boss of everything. Tea at five, things like that. All those secret societies. His mother should get out more. She would lose her wits having fantasies like she did writing letters to the Prime Minister about hormones. They would take her away and Janet would die. And who would look after him then? Mother, please don't go. I'll do something awful if you leave me. I will. I will. He opened his eyes wide, grasped the knife in his pocket. It was all perfectly clear, no doubts in this moment. The correct time had come. Everything was determined, no problem. Just like every time he came to this stone, very clear plans of action. Open the knife without her noticing first. She leapt up with a delightful squeal.
I've got an idea.
He did not answer her. He was concentrating.
I said, I've got an idea.
He looked into her face, and she looked away first, bent down, and stood up again, this time holding over her head a jagged chunk of glistening gypsum. Arthur could not open the knife. He could not move at all, except around his mouth, twitching, trying to shout out for her to stop. Silence, paralyzed. Bloodstream thundering, sweat pouring. This was true terror. She was going to hit him with that rock. Her arms dithered with the effort of holding the heavy thing high over her head. It blotted out the sun, then revealed it. It blotted it out. It was almost too heavy for her. She could not hold it much longer. Her lips were drawn back with effort. Her eyes were very wide open, concentrated. The shrew, the little shrew he had killed, he knew now. What it had felt. He had wondered at the time, standing still. A string of moments suddenly like beads clashing simultaneous a row of deaths. His the large one at the end. For that rock could crush deep into a skull. She drew in a great breath. To aim well, to throw hard, the air whistled in her chest. Great glee in her face. No, no. The sun flashed bright like white gold. There was quiet in the woods for a while until a breeze stirred up a couple of thrushes, and also ludicrous and genteel. Over the sound of crushed bracken, the little queen of the trees made an oof sound of working out the best way to reach one of the gates into the road. Then she stopped and turned around, yelling,
mad lady, yeah, yeah, yeah,
and then ran like a hare, full of daring, never to be caught. The crazy lady that nobody had seen her. She looked ordinary, and so had the man, just ordinary.
Oh, there you are, Arthur. Why didn't you answer me? I thought I heard a scream. Oh, whatever's that?
A dark stain marked the idea stone. Arthur managed to move enough to sit up and turn the queen's rock over, and they both stared in fascinated disgust at a crushed toad adhering to its underside. A violent death is the risk of guardians. Time began to move again, inexorably causing tea to be at 5. Josephine Saxton's Nature Boy. It's from Quark 3, a quarterly of speculative fiction edited by Samuel Delaney and Marilyn Hacker. This is Michael Hansen speaking. Technical production for Mindwebs by Leslie Hilsenhoff.